Welcome to Psychopath in Your Life. This is episode number 8. I'm your host, Diane Emerson. The topic today is going to be following on the subject we were talking about in episode 7, which was the article in The Atlantic. And the article, for those of you who are just catching up, is called When Your Child is a Psychopath. It was a very interesting article, and I received several emails about this subject, so I'd like to expand upon a little bit further. It kind of seems, in some regard, the more elusive the answers seem to be. But here's my feeling. If we don't understand the past, we have no path forward to the future. Several emails, one of them was a little bit disturbing. It was the part about blaming the parents. And let's take that off the table right here. We're not in the blame game, and what we're trying to do is understand how these things happen. So the parents aren't really the focus of any kind of blame. We're just trying to understand how we get to learn more information and what we do with that information that we find. So first, I'd like to talk a little bit about the one person that was brought up in most of the emails in that article, and he was a young man named Carl. Here's where the reporting can get very, very tricky. To Carl, this reporter found out about Carl when she went to this facility who housed these children to try to, you know, turn their lives around for the better. The big problem that I saw was that there is no data beyond the age out date of 18. So the reporter did follow this young man named Carl because he had returned to the facility, I imagine by phone or whatever, to report how he was doing, which was kind of rare. So they were able to have that opportunity to follow up with him. And the reporter went to visit with him and try to find some further history from his release from the facility. So here's where it got a little bit tricky, because in the interviews with his family, they felt Carl was just doing terrific, better than expected. I think better than expected is probably the key word here. They probably had, it would seem to be a normal kind of, whatever you phrase as normal kind of family. And because of his behavioral issues, ended him up in this facility because the parents were no longer able to control him. And then you looked at the wife that Carl was married to was interviewed, and, you know, it seems sort of like a disastrous relationship to me. He had been in trouble with the law for slapping or punching a cop. He was in a domestic fight with a wife over him bringing home other partners to have sex with, put the baby in the middle of some sort of hassle, use the baby as a body shield. The part that kind of was even more alarming was that he's now running a funeral home, and evidently, he left the wife to do most of the work on that, but I really can't think of probably a worse place to put a psychopath to run a funeral home when most of the people entering the doors are going to be vulnerable, predisposed victims. But I guess he had learned the empathy role. So here, it goes to show you that everything becomes convoluted through the eyes of the teller. And we don't really have any way of knowing how the gene gets passed. Does it get passed from one generation to the next? Does it skip a generation? That is the part that we really don't know. So the whole goal here is to learn to what things to look for. But this child abuse thing seems to be a common thread, both with psychopaths that use that as a way to abuse their victims and to garner sympathy. I wrote a book where I interviewed 3 psychopaths, and they had some very interesting takes on things. I'll start off with what one of them said when I was talking to him about he went through the diagnostic process, the PCLR, which is Dr. Hare's criteria for identifying and diagnosing psychopathic personality disorder. And so through this process, I was asking questions as far as, you know, would they ask you, you know, and one of my questions was, well, how compliant were you? And what he said was, this is his quote, "I was very tempted throughout this process to manipulate the results. Personality tests and the psych exams for employment are a hobby of mine to manipulate." So see, this is always on their minds, manipulation. So then I asked another one about how they got people to believe in them, and, you know, when things would become confrontational, how did they garner trust? How did they explain things away? And here's another quote that one of them said, "From what I understand, the goal here is to try to get them, the victim, to first tell everything about themselves and to be the great listener. You can use that later, and when it's your turn to present the image of being a victim of life and saying things to elicit sympathy or bonding. Maybe things like a rough childhood, some possible sexual abuse. You know, those types of things that get shared as a secret to not only keep them from telling others, but to draw them into the confidence. See, what they're doing here is, I talked about this several episodes ago, that they're seeking out kind and caring people. And then as a defense, once you start to get onto what's something's not right, they will pull out the victim card. Here we've uncovered one thing to always look for. If somebody seems to have a history of being the victim of life. Now, I'm not saying it's possible that people could just have drawn the wrong card out of the deck of life and possibly everything in their life just went rotten for a whole lot of reasons that they played no part in. Certainly that is a possibility. But then there is a stronger possibility that if you learn to be present in your conversation with people, you'll start to pick up on this thread. And the thread will be using the card of the victim as a deflector for those things that happen in life. So it makes it very complicated because your empathetic part of you will want to reach out to this person and feel like you want to help them because they've had this so-called, or however they describe, as abuse. So that's where the reporting really gets kind of hard to track, because you've got parents who are in a position to, I don't know, I have so much empathy for parents. I can't even imagine in my wildest nightmare what it must be like to come to terms with something like this. I can only just kind of picture it together, thanks to the generous contribution of parents over the years who've openly talked about their struggles having psychopathic children. And so I asked one of them, here's another quote I'll give you, about why they think that parents might feel the way they do about their children. And this actually made quite a bit of sense. And I'll quote you here. What he said was, the number one reason is, he's my son, and he is incapable of returning that love in kind. Number two, I might have played a part in making him that way. And number three is, he's my son, and I love him. And the obvious contender for four is, and is it in me too? Of course they're reluctant to talk. If they said it out loud, they'd have to listen to it. Verbalizing or writing down things make them much more real to people. Trans-hemispheric relay shortcuts. It cuts out the crappy buffer nature gave us and lets us understand things differently than if we just thought them. That's the end of that quote. I do agree very much about several of these points here. I've always been a believer that writing down your thoughts can sometimes be the ticket to unlock some of your fears. There's just something about the written word that when you see it in writing, it becomes, there's a certain clarity that happens with it. And it's something that can also, that clarity can have some baggage, it can have some pain, and it could have a lot of other issues that come with it. But writing does help. So see, it's interesting that these people and psychopaths themselves can clearly see that there's, to them, there's an advantage in using the victim card. And to the victims themselves, the people who are, people I'm referring to as victims, meaning people who have a psychopath in their life are all victims, to them, it can almost be a way to excuse away bad behavior. So, for example, if you really start buying into the thought that this person that's been gaslighting or abusing you was themselves a very bad victim of child abuse or whatever the message might be, then you can then kind of put that aside and kind of cover over the pain and the situation that brought you to that thinking in the first place. And it's a way of deflecting that pain. So what I always say is, when somebody's telling you something, try to pay attention. Listen. And first of all, mainly listen to your gut. The main thing that I've said this over and over again is, when you paint those red flags white, you miss out on a whole lot of details. And these people are very capable of helping you to miss those flags. So anyway, so I'll conclude for today. And the next episode, we're going to be talking more about some more specific signs to look for. And I really look forward to reading your comments. I've given you a couple of ways to contact me, both confidentially and through my email address. And you can go to the forum, which is psychopathinyourlife.com, the same name as the podcast. And you have a form you can fill out there that you can subscribe to anonymously, or you can just send me an email directly. And I look forward to reading all of your emails and try to respond to them on the air. So anyway, so that concludes today. Be safe out there, and I will look forward to talking to you next week on Tuesday. Goodbye for now.